Hello, this is Paul Kangas speaking from San Francisco. The following is a worldwide radio program. It was broadcast October 21st, 1991, an interview of myself by Tom Valentine on Radio Free Europe. The Radio Free Europe is a shortwave radio that is broadcast all over the world and picked up by local stations. The tape begins with Tom Valentine reading part of my article about Richard Nixon working, rather Jack Ruby working for Richard Nixon in 1947.
Major oil and other corporate interests. That's a good way to start a story there, Paul.
Well, thank you. It's not exactly anything original. I was just doing a little research on George Bush and Richard Nixon, and I noticed the two have been working together since the 40s. So I tied it all together in an article that you read.
When George Bush was given the CIA job, it was Jerry Ford, wasn't it?
When George Bush was given the CIA job?
76, Nixon was gone, so it was given to him by Jerry Ford.
No. You have to remember, the CIA is a secret organization. Members of the CIA, and you can meet them at many of the major colleges and business get-together. CIA agents I've met and talked to, they will never, never, never tell you they're a CIA agent. They will tell you, oh, I am a college professor, or I'm a businessman, I'm a priest, or their favorite one is, I'm a journalist for the Washington Post or the New York Times. So, they will never tell you they're in CIA. Like, George Bush's CIA connections go back to the 60s and 50s. And, you know, he was raised in secret organizations like the Skull and Bones. He was trained all his life to live a double life.
All right. Where about you? Where did you get started in all of this now? You were a guard, was it, for Jack Kennedy? A Secret Service, or how?
Indeed, I was. I was a guard for John Kennedy in 1961 in Washington, D.C.
With the Secret Service then?
No. There's many kinds of fences around the president. I was stationed at the president's helicopter port, the heliport, in Washington, D.C. And I was an enlisted man in the Navy, but because I was dressed very sharp, when the president was going out to meet people, they would send me out along with dozen other people to stand around with our rifles with chrome bayonets on to keep people from touching the president. And you can see people like me every day in the news around the president in Washington, D.C.
That's right, the honor guard and that sort of thing.
Right. And back in those days, though, we carried rifles with no bullets and all we had was bayonets on. They would issue us bullets if they felt there was a threat, but when I was there, there was never any fear.
How did you get into the idea of becoming an investigator and a person who was expert in photograph analysis?
Well, I was born, when I entered the Navy, they tested me. They test all recruits, they were at the time when I was in the military, and they discovered that I have eyes, special kind of eyes that I was born with, that can see through camouflage. They would test us on these
the colorblind things, the little dots and all of the blue greens and everything, and if you see the right number, then they know you're not colorblind.
Well, no, these were special map reading glasses that were used for high altitude photography, photo reading. And because I could see oil fields buried, oil drums buried in the ground in the pictures, because I could pick them out, I could pick out aircraft hidden under camouflage in the test. So they sent me to Naval Intelligence School in Alameda. And that's my background. I had many skills by the time I entered the military. I was an expert with a rifle in grade school and high school, and I was actually recruited by the Marine Corps in Oregon, where I live, because I was a well-known expert with a rifle. And the Marines sought me out and recruited me. I joined the Marines when I was a junior in high school.
All right, now, Paul, the interesting thing that you have is that you're saying that this particular photograph And I'm wondering, is this the one that is a rather famous photograph that everyone has seen of the tramps being arrested, where the guys have nice new shoes so they can't be tramps, and they got neatly tailored jean clothes, and I don't know who called them the tramps, but they're a picture. I used them in my own magazine, Newsreel Magazine, back in 77.
Right, that's it. But if you blow that photo up, and if you look carefully at the shoes, you'll notice the shoes are brand new, with a polish on, except for Frank Sturgis's front left shoe. It's got mud on the toe from where he was standing behind the grassy knoll shooting Kennedy.
Yeah, but those pictures, I thought, there's no way they look like Frank Sturgis.
In your book. But see, I see it differently. I work presently as a private investigator in California. I do criminal prosecution of people, and the police techniques, one of the tests, one of the questions on the exam in California to be a private investigator is, what is the most unique part of the human body that is publicly visible that you can use to positively identify a person and they can't disguise it? What is that?
The ear.
That's right. Now, with the ear, a picture of a person's ear, we use it for tracking down people.
In the National Catler in the 70s, we ran a thing of the ear and said, this has to be E. Howard Hunt, and we showed the ears.
Right, absolutely has to be. Absolutely.
I remember that story.
Yeah, well, see, that technique, the techniques for analyzing photographs and matching people up, is commonly used by investigators like myself and the police tracking down bank robbers or missing children. If you, parents out there listening, if you want a good way to track your kid, if somebody steals your kid, have a profile picture of your kid that shows the ear clearly. That's the best thing an investigator can have in their hand when they're looking for your kid.
I'll be darned, the ear. Okay, I remember that story. We're going to take a break coming up here shortly, and then we're going to let people come in and ask you a question. I want you to get, we'll come back, and you will explain why you accept the idea that these guys were the shooters.
Okay, everybody's got to read Woodward and Bernstein's All the President's Men. Okay.
Hi, everybody. This is Tom Valentine, and we're back live on Radio Free America. We're talking with Paul Kangas, and this is almost deja vu or something. They're not. It's history repeating in my brain, because I remember actually writing a story for the National Tattler with this ear, and then the ear of E. Howard Hunt, and saying E. Howard Hunt is the guy that was one of the tramps arrested. So this story goes back a long ways. When did you first get the idea that this and analyze this photo?
Well, I had heard of the photo before, shortly after the assassination, several years after the assassination, but it didn't click to me until after Watergate. And I tell you, anybody that wants to understand the assassination of John Kennedy has to check into the Woodward book on All the President's Men. To me, anybody that hasn't read that and Garrison's book is missing the big picture. So, to me...
Right, I've read both of them, so you're going to have to explain the big picture to me.
Well, my understanding of how it came about, while I was in the military, I was also peripherally involved in the invasion of Cuba. I was being trained for the invasion of Cuba in Patuxent River, Maryland, at a base there where we had a lot of spy aircraft. And there was a lot of spies operating out of Patuxent River. And we were being prepared for the invasion. And after I got out of the military, I ignored a lot of this stuff. But then when Watergate happened, all of a sudden, it all started clicking to me. The people involved in the Bay of Pigs had been arrested at the Watergate. And if you try and compare these people, what you discover is many of the same people were involved in Dallas. And probably Garrison's book makes the point best about the number of Cubans that were seen by eyewitnesses in Dallas. Some of them even wearing army fatigues, like the famous epileptic that this Cuban faked an epileptic fit right in Dealey Plaza, right where the president was going to be coming by. And so the only ambulance in that area picked him up and took him to the hospital. He and his girlfriend, who was dressed like a nurse. And then when he got to the hospital, he just got up and walked away. And it was a diversionary tactic. Well, Ian Garrison's book points out there were about 8 of these Cubans were seen in that area around the grassy knoll. And then if you check into the history of the people arrested in the Watergate, what you discover is people like Bernard Barker, Cuban, Felix Rodriguez, Cuban, Eugenio Martinez, Cuban, Frank Sturgis, many people think is a Cuban because he's been involved with the Cubans so long, and he lives down in Miami today.
Frank's just a mobster. Went to Cuba, but remember the mob was housed in Havana.
Oh, yeah, but see, the mob works for the CIA. It's not like the mob is some independent contractor that just does what it wants to do. I'm a private investigator. I take contracts from private individuals or attorneys to do things they don't want to do. And so I understand independent contractors like the mob. They take contracts to do things for the CIA the same way I take contracts from attorneys. And if you read the Watergate stuff and you read the history of the Bay of Pigs invasion and you read Garrison's book on the Kennedy assassination, in your mind, all of a sudden, a light bulb will click and you will see the big picture that the mass media does not want you to see. Now,
I think you really have something there because my partner in Newsreel magazine in the 70s, Tom Lutz, and Tom is retired now from the journalism game, but he put together our Kennedy assassination series and then followed that up with our cover had on it a chessboard and it had Castro, Richard Nixon, and JFK on it, and it linked the Watergate and the Kennedy assassination. It was a very interesting magazine.
Right. Yeah, it's important to understand this stuff. Like, I had an actor in, you know, there's Oliver Stone is producing a movie.
Yeah.
One of the actors in the movie knows about me and wrote to me and said, you know, why is this stuff so important? He's a student studying chiropractic health. He's going to be a chiropractor, but he's doing acting bit in the movie, and he wrote me this long 6-7 page letter. He's down in Dallas, and he wanted to know why is it significant. By the way, Dan, if you're listening, here's why it's significant. Chiropractors claim to want to treat your body in order to prevent illness and to treat old illnesses. Well, the Western philosophy of medicine treats disease after it happens. The Eastern philosophy tries to prevent disease. Our philosophy on history is to examine history, to understand it, so that we don't have to correct bad deeds after they're done, so that we can be alert to the coming. Like, if you've ever seen an avalanche starts with one rock starting to roll, and a key rock rolls away, and then the whole mountainside comes down. Well, what happened with the killing of Kennedy was it resulted in the death of tens of thousands of American troops and millions of Vietnamese in an illegal war designed to maintain the flow of heroin from the Golden Triangle into the United States.
All right, with that one, we're going to take a break. Paul Kangas is my guest, the subject of the Kennedy assassination, and we will go to your phone calls. I'm Tom Valentine. This is Radio Free America on the Sun Radio Network. Investigator, a private investigator out in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Paul, you have this photograph. What did you do? Enlarge it way up and study it and so on to come to the conclusions you came to?
Yes, I blew the photograph up quite large. As a matter of fact, if anybody would like a copy of that very large photograph, I'll send it to them for free. Just send me their name and address. Is it okay if I give my P.O. box?
All right, now. I was going to tell you, you know, when you came on here, when someone heard you were coming on, they called me earlier today, and they said, hey, I sent for that photograph and never got it. Be sure and tell him that.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm only human, and I've moved my office 3 times. During the earthquake, my office was 4 blocks from the scene of the assassination. I mean, I'm sorry, from the earthquake center, epicenter. And so I lost my office during the earthquake. I don't know when they ordered it, but it's quite possible that my office was destroyed during that period. So they may have been lost in the cracks.
A lot of people that have seen that photograph, they probably like to see it again. It's free, huh?
Yeah, And I'll tell you what else I'll send them. I have an FBI document in which the FBI interviewed Richard Nixon and asked him, where were you the day John Kennedy was killed? And guess what Richard Nixon told the FBI? He said, you know, fellas, I can't remember where I was. And I will send you a picture of Richard Nixon in Dallas, Texas, four blocks from the scene of the assassination, out of the newspapers, free. So my address is P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco. And the zip is 94142. If people would like copies of these FBI documents. They're labeled top secret, but I suppose that means back in the old days. I don't know who got these things. I think I found them on the floor of a men's room or something. Uh-huh. I don't know where I got them.
Well, now, I didn't get those things in mine. I'm gonna have to get on you and get me some here. I got all kinds of good stuff, though.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyway, now, you say, and we got to go to the phones. We got people who want to call and ask you questions. You say that this was the reason for the Watergate burglary was to try and get this evidence.
Absolutely. Now, I the photos?
Yeah.
The tramp photos?
Yeah.
Well, no. The tramp photos were not widely distributed before the burglary. What happened, apparently, Frank Sturgis, of all people, was interviewed by some journalists, and they asked him, why did you burglarize the Watergate? And I have a news story, which you probably have in your packet, and Frank Sturgis was asked, and he said, because Nixon was interested in the assassination of President John Kennedy. Now ask yourself for a minute, what does the burglary of the Watergate have to do with the assassination of John Kennedy? That's, you know, and here, this is a news story. I didn't make this up. This is out of the Dallas newspapers, it's out of the Miami newspapers, it's out of the San Francisco newspapers, and it's an amazing story, May of 1977. You know, I don't know why Frank burglarized the Watergate, but when he was asked, that's what he said.
Interesting stuff. Okay, we are going to go to the phones. You've been listening to it all now. David, Yellen, PA, you're the first up.
There?
Yep.
Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay, it's Yaden.
Yaden, okay.
I spoke before, Tom. How you doing?
Fine.
Great show. Paul, I had the pleasure of contacting you about 4 or 5 years ago, sent you a nice letter how the Kennedy assassination wasn't any different than the intelligence circles in Germany or in China or in France killing Mao, Hitler, or De Gaulle.
That's true.
Yeah, same modus operandi.
That's true.
Yeah, I have a question for you. George Bush and the Nixon connection are very familiar with because I'm a long-time researcher. One quick point, though, it wasn't just the heroin and the drugs. It was basically the whole power base that was against Kennedy involving oil, steel, and aerospace, steel. They were going to make a big financial killing in Southeast Asia in the war.
Now, wait a minute. You just reminded me of something, David. There was a book that came out that claimed that the whole assassination made some people very, very wealthy because they knew it was coming and they played the commodities market.
Richard Ney, the Wall Street gang.
Yeah, it was a very interesting book, and that was the whole thesis. But it seems to me that since these guys knew what they were going to do, they might as well get their buddies in the...
That's right. I got an interesting picture in front of me, and I want to ask you a question first about the George Bush-Nixon connection, which I said I'm familiar with. How about Jim Baker? Have any information on him, and I'll tell you why.
No, I don't have any, but I'd be glad to entertain some. What do you got?
May blow your mind. It's just an idea. Tom, I got a book in front of me called The Way We Were. 1963, the year Kennedy was shot.
Uh-huh.
Big coffee table book. On page 190, there's a picture of Kennedy's limo, and in the background, it's like a warehouse with a bunch of people standing on the first and second set of stairs. And in the background, it's like Jack Ruby, and I showed it to a few people in my family, and the man standing next to Jack Ruby looks none other than a younger version of our present Secretary of State.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. It could be a very interesting coincidence. It could be him. That would be a fascinating detail, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think of that, Paul?
Well, I think that's possible, and I think that's exactly the kind of...
Wait a minute. Paul analyzes photographs. Now, you heard that. He's got to see the photograph and analyze.
Yeah, please send it to me. My address is P.O. Box 422-644. San Francisco 94142. I would love to look at it, but I tell you, there's a lot of photos from that area that need to be looked at, and especially the faces of the Cubans that were seen around there. And there's plenty of photographs. We just right, and it's important. Like, I found, for instance, Joan Crawford was there at a meeting of Pepsi-Cola.
Yeah, Nixon was at that meeting also.
Right.
According to a movie called 4 Days in November, Lyndon Johnson must have been a pretty busy guy because, according to that movie narrated by Richard Basehart, Nixon went to Dallas a few days before, then he went to Honolulu, and then he came back to Dallas again?
Yep.
Yeah,
well, you also probably remember seeing the old pictures of Nixon in Vietnam in 1954 when he was setting up the heroin trade there.
Yeah.
You see those?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, there's a book on it called The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia. Yeah, and I forget which book the picture's published in, but it's a real important picture of Nixon in Vietnam talking to the people that were later identified by McCoy as leaders of the heroin traffic in Vietnam.
Very interesting stuff, bud. I want to give some others
okay,
a chance,
great,
David,
great
but
stuff,
thank you.
Good talking to you.
All right. Dave, it's amazing the number of Kennedy assassination busts out there, I'll tell you. Mike in Gilbert, Arizona.
How you doing?
Well, I'm sitting here just taking it all in. I don't know how much I believe, how much I don't believe, but it's fascinating information. What have you got for us, Mike?
Okay, Arts and Entertainment channel on cable has been running a series called The Men Who Killed Kennedy. Have you seen that?
Yes, I've seen it, and I consider it real weak. I mean, they don't have anything in there on Nixon. They don't have anything in there on Hunt and Sturgis. They're not showing the tramp photos. Any book that doesn't discuss or show the tramp photos, to me, doesn't count. And A&E, that program, doesn't count.
The man in the officer's uniform standing up there in the grassy knoll, and you can see the after shot of the rifle, you know, the smoke coming out, and then having them label him as one of the three assassins that were hired by a mafia boss down in Louisiana, and they were imported from Sicily.
That's a very good question. And the photo you're talking about is known as the Mormon photo. We now have the technology to computer enhance that photo and take a look at it. My analysis of it is there's a guy there in the middle standing, and I did the research on this photo years ago, and I've got it enhanced. The hat guy is actually out of the E. Howard Hunt. That's not an army hat he's wearing. That's E. Howard Hunt, you know, from the tramp photos with the hat. And the guy next to him is Sturgis. And the guy behind him is Bernard Barker. Do you know about the arrest of Bernard Barker in Dallas, Texas, the day of the assassination? An officer named Weissman ran behind the picket fence and was looking for whoever shot and found Bernard Barker there. Bernard Barker pulled out Secret Service credentials and claimed that he was with the Secret Service, and he was holding a rifle under his coat, and the cop wanted to know what he was doing. He said, well, I'm here guarding the president, and so the guy let him go. It was Bernard Barker, and the officer didn't realize who it was until years later during the Watergate burglary arrest. He saw Barker's picture in the newspaper, and he went ape. He realized that was the same guy he had arrested behind the grassy knoll. So that Mormon photo is key. It's very important, but it needs to be run through a computer enhancement, not just colorized.
Okay, but the man that's shooting is in a police uniform with a badge. They call him Badge Man.
Nah, that's not true. It isn't that clear in the photo. You saw the A&E program, right?
That's what I'm quoting on, what I've seen. And you can, well, of course, they colorized it naturally, but you can't see a badge.
Well, that's not a badge. That's, his hand, actually, on top of his rifle as he's shooting, or it's light bouncing off the telescopic sight is what you see there. And that picture is a key picture, but it's not as good as the tramp photos. Now, why this A&E program would show that photo, which is not clear, yet the tramp photos are Pulitzer Prize-winning photographs, seven of them, showing E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, the top officials of the Central Intelligence Agency, and catch this surprise, in one of the photos you can clearly see Dorothy Hunt, the wife of E. Howard Hunt, in the photo, standing next to E. Howard Hunt, disguised as a journalist, covering her face with her hand, or attempting to, and that she actually, in the CIA, Dorothy Hunt had a higher rank than her husband, E. Howard Hunt.
Records are? Does she have a whole bunch of this stuff?
Yeah, Mae Brussels' records are all still out here. In fact, we just did, I helped co-write a play about Mae Brussels out here that is going to be taken nationwide next year. And if anybody would like to get our schedule, again, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope to P.O. Box 42264 San Francisco 94142, and I'll send you the schedule. The play played all summer in California, and it got rave reviews even in the Chronicle and Examiner.
Let me stop you for one second here, Paul, and thank you very much for this, Stella. Folks, those of you who don't know, Mae Brussels, MaeBrussels, was an investigative journalist in her own right out in the Monterey, California area, and this woman did. She is Sherman Skolnick's mentor, among others. Barbara Honegger learned a lot from Mae Brussels. A lot of people learned a great deal from the late Mae Brussels. Go ahead, Paul. I just wanted to get that in.
Okay, very good. Yeah, anyhow, we're going to do this play nationwide starting next summer. We're going to travel all over the country with this material. So if people want to know when and where it's going to be, write to me, Nick, now. And I'll put you on the mailing list. And then again, you have to write to me next summer to remind me. And if you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, you know, it saves me time and trouble, and I'm more likely to respond to you, because...
Well, if you deliver all the things you say you're going to deliver, I won't mind plugging. See, that's the big thing. Hey, I'm looking forward to this. One last caller, Bob in New Jersey.
Good evening, Tom. Good evening, Paul.
Hi, Bob.
In defense of that A&E program, I've been watching it carefully. On the third week, they did show the tramp's photo, and the tallest tramp, they claimed, was some fellow in prison somewhere, and they went and interviewed him. He denied that he was one of the tramps. He said that if he was, he would have been like most of the people associated with the Kennedy assassination. He would be dead by now. And so I kind of believe him, that he wasn't one of the tramps, but they did show that. And Mark Lane, who was on Tom's program earlier, had debunked that picture, saying that that was a CIA fraud, that picture. But I just want to say one thing before you leave, and I know the time's close. Could you please give us what the Bush-JFK-Nixon connection is to the assassination?
Oh, sure. I'll detail it very quickly. George Bush's father hired Richard Nixon by running an ad in the Los Angeles Times in the 1940s. The ad clearly stated they were looking for a candidate to run for Congress. Nixon was one of the people who answered the ad. Nixon got the job. They hired him to be vice president with Eisenhower. George Bush's father, Prescott Bush, is credited in all the books about Eisenhower as being the man who created the ticket of Eisenhower and Nixon.
Very good. We're out of time. Paul Kangas, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll be in touch again. All right, folks, that's it. The evening is coming to an end. Another fascinating JFK bit. We'll be talking a totally different subject tomorrow night. Look forward to it then. I'm Tom Valentine. They're playing my song. Good night.